A Playlist Original.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster. My name is Gaius Bowling, and I'm with the two people that everyone's kind of been. I've been on every time we've recorded so far this year, but we've either been missing Owen or Brittany, and now they're both back.
We're all together.
We are back. The band's back together.
back together, guys.
First Brittany was out because she was sick, and then Owen went out of town. And we've actually had guests on every week so far this year, since we started recording in 2022. So we're continuing that again today because we have a few like news items to talk of at the top of the show, but this is mostly going to be about the new Scream movie that came out over the weekend and completely killed it at the box office as well. Despite the Omicron variant, a lot of people saying a lot of people wouldn't maybe check it out in theaters, it kind of blew apart expectations and ended up doing a lot better than a lot of people thought it would. So we're going to mostly talk about that. But before we do, I'm going to introduce first our boy Mark J. Parker, who was actually on the Scream anniversary episode that we did. And he was such a great guest that we want to have him back again. He's a short film extraordinaire and host of the monthly podcast Rethink Rewind. So welcome back, Mark.
Welcome back, Mark.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. I'm happy to make it to the sequel of Back to the Blockbuster. Thank you.
Sir, yes, sir.
And then also I have just someone I know from like doing my G-Roll stuff on Instagram, actually both pages, but we got our boy Darren here from Darren's Movie Reviews on Instagram. Say hello, Darren.
Hey everyone, thanks for having me. Excited to be here tonight.
Thank you. And I'm glad you and you're very you're one of the first people to respond when I put it out on Instagram. So thank you for coming.
Perfect. You caught me on my lunch break, so I was scrolling.
Perfect.
And then we got our boy Donnie D, who probably has the best name on on the show right now. Donnie, you want to tell us about like what your pages and stuff are about on Instagram?
Hey guys, Donnie. well, one of my pages is just my personal page, but I do post a lot of movie stuff, so you could call it my main movie page. My other movie page is Mad Movie Time. That's where I write my film reviews when I have the time to write them. I watch a lot of movies, but I also have a lot on my plate, so when I do sit down and really write a review, it's like thinking times.
There you go.
But yeah.
Welcome, Donnie.
Welcome, guys. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. We're happy to have you. Before we dive into Scream, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that kind of happened in the news, and I only wanted to bring this one up because Joss Whedon actually said something today, finally. So a lot of last year, it kind of came out during the time that when he came in as a replacement director on Justice League, Zack Snyder had to depart because of personal family reasons. Ray Fisher, who played Cyborg in the movie, basically came out and said that he was completely abusive on set and that the higher ups at Warner Brothers kind of encouraged that kind of behavior from him and they didn't really do anything to stop it. Ray Fisher was the main one to say out loud what was going on. Some of his Justice League co-stars would bring it up if it was brought up to them. Like Gal Gadot said that, yeah, he said some things to me that were inappropriate. And she said she handled it right then and there with the higher ups and it never happened again. Jason Momoa didn't really give specifics, but he did basically agree with Fisher that it wasn't a good working environment. And Ben Affleck, who also hasn't named Joss Whedon specifically, also said that it was probably one of the worst experiences he had on a film. Yeah, so if you read in between the lines, like it all has to do with like Joss Whedon. There was like an internal investigation done by Warner Brothers into those claims. And because of that investigation, they talked to other people who have worked with him in the past. And one of them most notably was Charisma Carpenter, who played Cordelia on Buffy the Vampire Slayer for 3 seasons. And then she was on the spinoff Angel for 4. And she basically said that he almost, what he sounds like he did, he basically like shamed her for becoming a parent. I don't think that he wanted her to like get pregnant because it kind of affected like what he wanted from her on the show. And instead of like, you know, filming around it or writing it in, he basically shamed her for like one, having a child out of wedlock, and he fat shamed her on top of that. And this is all according to Charisma Carpenter. And that he was casually mean to her basically from the start of Buffy all the way through Angel. Of course, there are a lot of people when she said what she said, they're like, well, why didn't she say anything earlier? And the thing is, you can actually go on YouTube and find her at a convention talking about this, but not very as detailed as she did after the investigation came out. So Joss Whedon didn't say anything when these people were talking until today. And he did it for a profile called The Undoing of Joss Whedon, and it was published Monday morning. And he basically said that in terms of like, in regards to Ray Fisher's claims, because Ray Fisher also complained that he lightened his skin on the film as well. But Whedon said that he basically lightened the whole film. It wasn't just him. And that he cut most of his stuff because it logically didn't make sense to him. And it was an issue that he just wasn't a good actor. And that's something that, of course, Ray Fisher didn't really say much today. He said, like, basically, he's wrote that he saw the article, but didn't want to comment on it today because it was MLK Day, and he wants to kind of leave that aside. And, like, I'm sure he will say something more in the coming days, I guess. But then he also addressed what Gal Gadot said, that he threatened her career while making the movie. He said it was a misunderstanding because, like, she wanted to cut a scene, didn't want to do a scene, and he basically said that he would lie on a railroad track and die before, like, he took the scene out. And he said because English is not her first language that she misunderstood him. And basically her response to what he said today was, like, I understood him perfectly. So this is not, like, this is not, there's no misunderstanding. Like, she's basically saying, like, I know when someone is threatening my career, and that is what you did. And she had, and like, and she's been really good about this, right? She's like, she handled it with the people she needed to handle it with at the time. And she hadn't felt the need to talk about it more other than, like, you know, someone like him bringing this up and making it seem like she merely misunderstood him. He also talked about Charisma Carpenter and basically said that she had issues with, like, some line reads, but then he also complimented her by saying, like, no one could deliver dialogue like she could, and that he doesn't recall any of the things that she alleges that he said.
Like a sort of backhanded compliment sort of
thing. Yeah, it was weird. It was like, yeah, like, she was really good at delivering some of that dialogue, but, you know, she had issues with, like, line reads, and, like, we had issues like that. But, like, you know, like, he basically said that he doesn't understand where her comments are coming from because he doesn't remember really saying them. And he basically implied that, like, the last year, he became an easy target because, like, his ex-wife came out and said some things about him in the press about how, like, he had cheated on her and, like, all this other stuff, and that he was, like, betting actresses that he, like, worked with on his TV shows while he was with her. And that he said that he was basically just an easy target for, like, all these people who wanted to trash him. So he denied a lot of, like, what was going on. And I just thought it was interesting that he finally said something, but when he finally did decide to speak, it wasn't really eloquent, and it wasn't really, like, I apologize. Like, not even the backhanded apology, like, I'm sorry if you felt that way. He just pretty much stood firm in, like, what he thinks is his truth, and that they overreacted, and he was told to do a job. Like, on Justice League, he was told to do a job to make the movie better, as we know he didn't really make the movie better, and that he made these decisions because of creative reasons, and not because he's, in the case of Ray Fisher, trying to lighten his color because he's a racist or anything like that. He says he wasn't abusive to Ray Fisher on set, won't admit to being that way to Charisma Carpenter, and then a slew of other actors who came out for this piece, and, like, in the last year, he basically implied that they were all wrong and that everyone's out to get him. So I was just wondering what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I think it's tough, especially, I mean, him saying that he's the, like, an easy target now. I mean, it kind of goes back to that common saying that if everyone you meet is an asshole, then you're probably an asshole. So I think that with all of these constant sort of allegations that are being sent his way, I mean, it's impossible to think that it's just a misunderstanding on five or six different levels throughout the years. So it obviously has to be a pretty recurring point that he's mistreated some people on set, had some strong ideas that were not really listened to, or maybe Warner Brothers or someone kind of looked the other way, which is a little disheartening to think of, especially in a movie like the Justice League, where you'd think that you'd want everyone to kind of be collaborative in order to make a movie that everyone likes. But I mean, if these allegations are coming from multiple sources, it's impossible for me to think that he's in the right whatsoever at all.
Yeah, actually, that pretty much hits the nail on the head, because like, so this has like always been like a troubling thing for me, because like Buffy the Vampire Slayer is probably like my favorite show ever.
Oh my god, yeah.
And it's always hard to learn that about your heroes, I guess. Like, so like, I respected him as like a writer and creator, and like I had heard these little stories about him over the years, like not maybe to this extent, but like he just seems like someone who, like, once he got famous, a little bit of money, he got like entitled, because he was creating all these things that were like well received, either on TV or, you know, directing the Avengers and stuff like that. It just seems like a lot of that went to his head, and like every story I've heard is that he can be a bully, and like once things like
sounds like it sounds like he's always been a bully, though. I think it's just people mm-hmm. just started noticing it, or women started taking action against it.
Yeah.
And but like, I think he's always been like that. I hate to burst your bubble, but unfortunately, I think people like that are always going to be like that. And if anything, it's going to grow stronger. They're like bulliness. And right, I think Gal Gadot was perfectly fine in saying that she can speak English just as well as everyone else. It has nothing to do with the language barrier.
Yeah, because do you guys remember a little while ago, even Michelle Trachtenberg, who was on a few seasons of Buffy, came out saying that like there was a time on the show when like she was not even allowed to be in the same room as him, which is quite alarming and a little vague. So we don't know the specifics, but yeah, it sounds like you're right, Britt, that like he's actually kind of been this way for a while. And so it makes me wonder, like, what does Sarah Michelle Gellar think? What do some of the Marvel Avengers actors think, because they haven't really said much about him. Am I right? Like Scarlett Johansson, right?
The only thing I can think of in terms of like the Avengers is maybe he didn't act that way on that set because there were bigger names there that he probably couldn't do that to. Like he couldn't really do that to like a Robert Downey Jr. or a Samuel L. Jackson, or I think he kind of knew his place in that situation. Now they said on the second one, on Age of Ultron, that it did show that he was kind of stressed and like trying to deliver like the movie that they wanted, and that he seemed a bit more irritable compared to what he was like when they made the first movie. But that's my only guess as to why like they haven't said anything, because maybe he didn't do anything to them. And Sarah mm-hmm. Michelle Gellar, she did say a little something, but maybe not enough, when Charisma Carpenter came out and said what she said. She basically said that she supports anyone that wants to speak their truth. And even though she wants to be associated with the character of Buffy, she doesn't want to be forever linked to the guy who created it. And that was like kind of like right. her statement mm-hmm. on it. Right. Some people thought she should have said more.
Interesting. I think what you said about him being stressed on set and him causing a rift because of stress, I think we need to remember that when we talk about women filmmakers, because women filmmakers get that impression a lot, where they say, oh, they were under a lot of stress. Women are more stressful or whatever, more emotional and all of these things. And right then and there, we have a male filmmaker who's being an asshole because he's stressed. I mean, everyone making a movie is stressed. It's part of the job.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah. That doesn't qualify you to be a bully, though.
Yeah, I agree. Darren, what do you think about the whole situation?
Well, touching on the Marvel thing, I think the other reason he wasn't like that with Marvel's, they had Kevin Feige clearly calling the shots for the whole, not just the film, but the whole universe as a whole. So Joss Whedon's not going to come in and question that. Versus Warner Brothers, we know they were doing stuff behind the scenes to get rid of Zack Snyder as well. So they didn't really have a leash on Joss Whedon to let him do whatever. We saw the films, we know what the results of that were. as for his statements, it comes as no surprise. He's not going to come out and admit anything because, yes, there's no lawsuits currently happening, but if he goes on the record saying something, so he's just going to deny. I think the truth is somewhere in between the two, but more likely close to everyone who's spoken out, because there was a few comments in his interview that, you know, I could see working. Like, he made the comment that he came in and everyone is like, you know, not willing to change direction of the film, which makes complete sense. They've done two films or three films, some of them with Zack Snyder. Joss Whedon's coming in doing a hack job at the end as ordered by Warner Brothers. So you could see some tensions naturally occurring, but, you know, then Joss Whedon did what he did and that's not allowed or acceptable in any way, shape or form. So this is no surprise. He's just continuing his behavior and will continue to do that forever.
Hopefully until someone, and like many of these people have now, I mean, a bully is only a bully until someone stands up to him. So yeah, hopefully now with people standing up to him and kind of saying, hey, you can't act like this, let's hope that this behavior changes and others who are trying to kind of have that old school directorial behavior of it's my way or the highway can kind of subside and we can see a little bit more of, especially if you're basically ordered to come in and trash the movie, how can you not have everyone around you feel like, you know what, I'm not really a huge fan of this guy after making successful movies with Zack Snyder and then kind of coming in and trying to push your way around.
Right. And I think that's what he did. I think like it's described by like Ray Fisher, at least, that like he kind of came into Justice League and they were told that he was only supposed to do a few reshoots and like kind of finish what they had already been working on. And he basically came in and made a completely different movie. He didn't like what Zack Snyder had done, and that could also be a thing about behind the scenes stuff with Warner Brothers and Zack Snyder. Maybe they just didn't like what he was doing or were okay with Whedon coming in and like changing all that stuff. But like what he ended up doing with an established cast who have worked with this guy already, he came in and like threw his weight around and basically was like, well, I'm the director now, you have to do what I want you to do. And I think when there was some resistance, he probably, and it's no excuse for acting the way that he did, but I think it kind of started there. And then you're right, since there was no one had a leash on him, they were just letting him do whatever he wanted because he's Joss Whedon and, you know, he directed The Avengers, which made a ton of money. And like, he had that kind of under his belt. So like, Ray Fisher has talked about, because Ray Fisher did not just want to go after Joss Whedon. He was, anyone at Warner Brothers that like kind of let that happen, he named them too. And it was like, he was like, there were several meetings that he had where he was letting them know, like, this is what's going on. And they didn't do anything to kind of stop it. And then, of course, when they did this, like, internal investigation later, they quietly removed Joss Whedon from the Nevers, because he was supposed to do that on HBO Max. But they didn't really, Ray Fisher wanted, like, a public reprimand of him. And that's not really what happened. It was kind of like, oh, well, we took him off this project and we did an investigation, like, there might be some truth to what's going on, but like we're ending it there. And Ray Fisher, to his credit, this is someone who is not like a huge actor by any means, but he stood his ground on like, I felt like what we went through on that particular film with him was wrong and people should know about it. And that's why I've always thought there was like so much truth to what he said, because he could have easily like stopped and be like, all right, he knows it could cost him his career too for like speaking up against someone like Joss Whedon and Warner Brothers. But he did anyway. So that's why I've always thought like, yeah, there's some truth to it. Basically, and based on the stuff I've heard about him a little bit in the past, like, you know, he seems like he is just like a glorified bully a little bit just because he's successful. I don't know, Donnie, do you have anything that you want to add about Joss Whedon?
I just think he needs to be stopped.
Stop it. By the Avengers.
By the Avengers.
And Buffy. Ooh, we need a team up.
Yeah.
Make the most meta movie ever.
Yeah.
I think he just needs, it's like you guys said, you know, he really just needs to be put in this place. He has no right to be treating people like that. You know, it's pretty sad. You know, a lot of people look up to these people, and, you know, it's tough seeing that happen. Like, it's a reality.
Yeah, it is. Like, you're just like, because, you know, especially when you admire their work, you're just like, well, damn, like, I was hoping that you weren't going to be an asshole, but here we are.
There's a lot of people out there.
Another
like
example.
That,
totally. And the industry is
like, you really don't meet your heroes.
That's what they tell you that all the time. They're like, because they will disappoint you, I guess. But yeah, I mean, like, he doesn't have anything lined up, so I don't know what's going to be, what's going on with him in terms of work. Like if anyone really wants to work with him. I know we've talked a lot about like cancel culture on the show and like whether or not that's good or not. But if someone acts the way he does and is like pushing his weight around and like being insulting to people, like I kind of don't want him really to find another project that he can.
I think with this circumstance with a director like this, I think he doesn't really have to be canceled. I think people will just not want to work with him. So it's not really him getting canceled per se, but it's just people not wanting to work with him anymore.
Also, his name is Joss, not even Josh. Like, get a real name, dude. Come on.
It's like your mother wanted to name you Josh and fucked up. since we're on the kind of the topic of Gal Gadot, I wanted to bring this up, this casting news up, because this actually got mentioned on our podcast episode last week when we were doing, like, we were just talking about female-led action movies, and we were just talking about stars who, like, should headline certain projects or they should headline certain remakes and stuff. And one of the guys on there said, well, why don't they remake To Catch a Thief and cast Gal Gadot? And then the next day, I don't know if this guy had like an inside track or if he just put it out in the universe, but the next day they announced that she was going to be starring in a remake of To Catch a Thief.
Being sneaky. He probably had an inside.
You know, it's an Alfred Hitchcock movie. It's a classic. We talk a little bit about this with like throwing people onto remakes like this. And I know like Gal Gadot is like, we talked about this before, whether or not we think she's A-list or not. I guess she is at this point, because like she's lined up. Lined up project after project after project. I don't know if I love this idea, just because I think there's certain movies you don't really need to touch, and this is one of them. And I would just like to have seen her in something that like,
especially it being a Hitchcock movie.
I know, yeah.
We all saw how that turned out with Psycho. That's another
thing. Yeah. Like, like they remade Psycho. I mean, like, A Perfect Murder is like a remake of Dial M for Murder. Like, and it's not like those movies are necessarily bad. Well, Psycho was bad. A Perfect Murder is not necessarily like a bad movie. It's really hard to touch like Hitchcock. But I mean, I see the potential of her doing well in it. I just don't know if I'm 100%.
Do we know who's directing it?
No, not yet. Well, there is a female writer on it.
I've actually never seen the original. I guess I really should.
It's really, yeah, really good. Mm-hmm. Let me look up her name real quick.
It's Grace Kelly in her prime.
Oh yeah, wow.
Yeah, Eileen Jones is attached to write it. And I guess it had been in the works for a little bit. And she is a TV writer no more for Prodigal Son. And she also has a pitch for a movie that with Margot Robbie that she's producing. And so she's becoming she's like an up and coming writer. It's a classic. I just don't know if you should really necessarily touch it. And if it's a good move for Gal Gadot to do it. I don't know. I'm not really.
The original version was filmed on a soundstage, so I do think that this has potential, just because of what filmmaking is today. I think they can do a lot with it now that they couldn't do back when it was originally made. So I am interested to see, you know, the driving scenes are just like them in a car and just like with a green screen. So like that could be like. That could be revamped a little bit. I mean, I'm
so interested. Funny how obvious those are nowadays. It's like you're gonna be immersed in those driving scenes now. It's just so obvious.
Like, they're just like,
yeah, any like Seinfeld episode or anything like that. It's just green screen.
Like, pretend like we're driving in the car.
Yeah.
It's so bad. But yeah, no, I can see the potential of like you know, making it today. There are things that can be improved upon. I just don't know if like the story itself can be improved upon by remaking it. I don't know, what do you guys think about
I'll that? Just go back to my original statement that I've made multiple times for this. It's just like, I just want original ideas, and I love, like, you can remake as many movies as you'd like, old ones, even ones that are somewhat relatively new, but I just want original concepts. That's why I'm excited for The Black Phone to come out. Like, that's gonna that's just an original idea, and I think that we need more of that out there. And unfortunately, I feel like most of the original content is being created by more independent people on stuff like Netflix. And so it misses the eyes of per se the Oscar lobbyists or whatever it is. And so a lot of the original stuff is not getting this $100 million backing from these big studios because they want something that's going to make $200 million. So it's like, what's the best way to do that is get an idea that people have already heard of, but I'm getting a little tired of it, especially with someone who I love, Gal Gadot. I think she's a great actress, but to kind of pick someone who's just at the top of their game and just stick them in a remake movie, it's not necessarily something that I'm dying to line up and go see.
I agree. What about you, Darren?
Kind of echo the comments on, you know, original ideas. I think we need more of those. But in terms of remaking, if they can get the right director and creative team behind it, it could be really good. I think you just have to look at Spielberg, who just redid West Side Story, you know, 60s Oscar darling that won 10 awards back in its day, remade with keeping the story true to the original with some slight tweaks to kind of adjust for the modern day, but having that kind of expanded scope we have with filmmaking technology, it could be really good. And with an actress like Gal Gadot on board, you could get younger audiences more involved in watching Hitchcock's films and going back. So I think there is something to be said about remaking these old films, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with it.
Yep. I agree with Donnie. I just hope it doesn't turn out like Psycho. That's all I kind of hope. I mean, every time I think about people remaking Hitchcock stuff, like that's the first thing I think about. And that was supposed to be like, I remember the Psycho remake was supposed to be like, Gus Van Sant was like, no, I'm going to do it shot for shot because I wanted to be so faithful to the original. And all it did was show how much of a poor film the new one was by having like a shot for shot remake of something that was like 10 times more amazing than when it came out.
And adding in like weird moments of like Vince Vaughn masturbating. Like,
yeah, for no reason. That?
Like,
for reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. No reason.
I have an unpopular opinion. I kind of liked him as Norman Bates.
He wasn't bad. I didn't think he was bad.
I thought he played a solid role. I think just, you know, got flack because he was in the remake to begin with. Like, right. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like he got too much hate.
That was when Anne Heche was a thing too. Like we were like casting.
Oh, yeah. Julianne Moore was in that movie.
And Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore. The cast was
wasn't Viggo Mortensen in it too?
He was great. And he was in a Perfect Murder. That was like Viggo like starting to become like a heartthrob like movie star. Yeah.
Love Viggo.
I think that just reiterates the fact that it doesn't really matter who's in it or who directs it. It can still flop.
Yeah. And that is a good example of that, actually. So one of the next things I want to talk about, since we are discussing a horror movie tonight, I was very excited.
I actually wanted to ask Owen something.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Do you think they showed too much in the Black Phone trailer?
Too much? I think
Or do you think it's just like one of those tip of the iceberg things?
I hope it's tip of the iceberg. I mean, I barely even knew that it was Ethan Hawke. And so I think that that's right? What I was so excited about was that I was like, this dude is scary. And to kind of get the presence of who I now know is Ethan Hawke, I just got really excited to kind of see him and like sort of his like this very, very creepy sort of mindset, which I've never seen him do before. So that's why I was really excited. Plus, it was just like, that room looks horrible and scary. I don't want to be there. And just also just taking an idea of every sort of nightmare I had when I was a kid, that being kidnapped, I just immediately was like very intrigued by that. So I think that there's definitely some stuff that they showed there, but not the kind of thing like a Halloween trailer where they show every single death in the trailer. Yeah.
I was lucky enough to see the Black Phone at Beyond Fest back in October. And They I could tell that they were very excited because usually they're like the one you to hold the review until it gets closer to when the movie comes out. And they sent an email after the festival was over. They were like, hey, like you can review it right away. I think they were very confident in what they had. And some of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes are, I think it was like 92% fresh the last time I looked. And I was so excited for people to see it because I loved it. And then I heard that they pushed it back all the way to June. And so it just sucks being able not to talk about it really with anyone because like only like one other person on our team at Joe Blow saw it, and I saw it, and I've been wanting to tell people how great it is because it is. Owen and Donnie, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I think it's like I think the trailer after having seen the movie, it's kind of a tip of the iceberg kind of thing. There's more to it than what is shown in the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, even if that was a lot to be shown, I mean, I'm still excited for it. I love Ethan Hawke.
Man. Yeah, and Ethan Hawke is scary good. Scary good in it. Like, it's not like a scenery chewing performance where it's like over the top. He is perfectly frightening in it. And you can tell he's having a lot of fun like playing someone like that, because he doesn't really get to much.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of actors, like if I was one of those kind of guys where you're mostly typecast as kind of like a hero or someone who plays like sort of an archetype of like the good guy, to get cast as a villain, oh gosh, I would eat that up. I would immediately just immerse myself and try and be as like creepy and sort of sadistic as possible. But then as most actors, hopefully not like Jared Leto method acting, but immediately switch it off and be nice to the kids after being terrifying. You're like, hey, sorry if that was scary, but you're doing great.
Yeah, Jared Leto would still be mean to the children after they were done.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Then mail them dead animals.
I have a question. After seeing it, does it really need to be in theaters, or do you think it could have been a streaming movie? Like,
it's good enough, right? I think that it could kind of break through and make a decent amount of money as like a original horror film. So I can see why they held it. But we talked about this kind of offline before, like, you know, even with Scream, like I know that some of the film people on Twitter and stuff, like press, were upset that they didn't send out like digital screeners for it, because still some people are afraid to go to the movie still. And you know, they were kind of hoping last minute that they would do a whole like day and date, like, you know, release in theaters and on Paramount Plus.
Right.
But that didn't happen. I mean, I think when they feel like they're confident enough that it can make money, they're just going to go straight theatrical. And I think with The Black Phone, I think it's original enough and scary enough, and if they promote it the right way, it can make a lot of money in theaters, I think. It's, at least for like a, you know, original horror films are hard to come by, and like I think sometimes movies like that stand out because they're original. And I think it has a good chance. And then showing confidence, pushing it to June, I think pushing it to summer shows that they have confidence in the fact that it can do well too. So, but yeah, I mean, I could have seen it easily being on streaming, but you know, there's always the dollar signs at the end. So
at least the trailer wasn't, remember when like Paranormal Activity came out and the trailer for like those horror movies was basically just a theater full of people being scared.
Being scared. Yeah. Right, yeah. That was like the promotional thing for like a lot of those movies.
I think The Conjuring did that too. It's like the scariest movie of all time, yeah. And they just show a black and white theater of people getting jump scared. It's like, yeah, right. Is that really the marketing you're going for?
Yeah. And does that really show you like that kind of? I mean, I ended up liking Paranormal Activity, but sometimes that shows me like this isn't as scary. If you have to like tell me it's scary by showing other people reacting to it,
no, true.
It's probably not that scary. But yeah, like a few horror movies have done that in the past, like in their trailers, they're like see the movie everyone's afraid of, and there's a bunch of people in the theater like screaming and throwing their popcorn. And like, this is either really staged or you don't have to.
Because their VFX isn't done yet.
Yeah.
There isn't done yet. Behind the scenes scoop. It's actually not done.
Like, it's coming out in 3 weeks. Just show people getting scared.
Yeah, we don't have any footage. Well, speaking of horror movies, I want to bring this up because since we're talking about Scream and it's part of a huge franchise, they're doing another Final Destination for HBO Max. I was kind of surprised that it, like, that they didn't go theatrical, but I think they are trying to build like original content on HBO Max, and that's why they're like sending it there. But John Watts, who directed the last few Spider-Man movies, he wrote the treatment for it, and he's producing it. And I love this franchise. Even the more ridiculous it gets, the more I like it. I know the first movie was more of like it was a little smarter than the sequels. Like, it was more to it than just, you know, let's see how we can kill all people and fun and creative ways. The sequels all became, let's just see how we can kill people in fun and creative ways. But that's fun in its own right as well. So I'm excited they're making another one.
Donnie, you made a pretty animated gesture there. Are you excited for the Final Destination?
No, yeah, he was like, what?
John Watts producing. That's what I'm excited for. It's in good hands. I think he's gonna treat this movie very well, and maybe give a little bit more of a oomph to the franchise that it needs right now. But I love the fifth one. I think that one. Yeah. I think that one stands out completely from the rest of them. Too. Like I love the first two, three and four. I'm like, you know, this is good, but I feel like they could have done a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. I think everyone knows what those movies are about. They're just like a creative, just dump.
And so it goes without saying, they are fun movies to watch.
Like, yeah,
they're really fun.
Whether they're good or bad, exactly
There was like an element in the new Scream that actually made me think of Funhouse Nation, and we'll get to it. But I love how those movies do really play with your expectations, where you're like, "Oh my God, okay, this is how it goes. Oh no, it's not. Okay, oh this is how it happens." You know, so. Yeah,
I'm ready a sharp for object here.
Yeah, like, another thing that I'm excited for is who are they going to cast in this next movie?
Yeah,
like they have so many people to choose from, and John Watts as you know, even being involved in this, people are going to start calling.
Zendaya,
that'd be awesome.
We might have a few big names in it, and we're.
I was just about to say, I think we're going to get some like B-list people. Like, I think we're going to get some like decent,
like up and comers.
I mean, like Scream had a bunch of like up and comers too, and I think I think that this is another opportunity for those up and coming actors to just pop in and be killed.
Sure, someone like Euphoria would totally be in the cast.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Well, I was thinking that guy from Scream, that Mason, I forgot his name.
Because we're
finishing up a movie for Amazon right now, and he's in that too. So I've seen him twice this weekend. I've like watched two movies with him in it. So he's like, he's working.
By the way, my mind was blown. I had no idea he was Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son until I like read like an article about him. I read an article about him, and I was like,
explains why he's working so much.
I'm like, you have a problematic dad, but like, you're cool. I had no idea until I read the article about him I even know Cuba Gooding Jr. had a son. Like,
I was just about to say, unfortunately he did procreate, I guess.
But yeah, I agree with Donnie though. It's in really good hands, and I think that like it does kind of present the opportunity to cast some really good people in it, like with him attached. And I don't know, it's funny, those movies are like so simple, but they work so well. Like I the second one still, like, I don't think I could ever be in the car behind like anything with like a bunch of logs in the back, so without thinking about like, oh, they're gonna fall from there and like crash through my windshield. Are like, there's like, all
the
these,
reason
like,
I stopped tanning.
Yeah, right.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Oh
my God. They even get the girl in like the car wash and like
the laser, the eye LASIK. Oh my God. Yes. Oh. Terrifying.
Yeah, it's just terrifying. It's like all these mundane things that you do at home are suddenly completely dangerous.
You know, I was just thinking, since Devon Sawa is doing pretty well in the Chucky show, which I'm like in the middle of, I'm behind, I wonder if they could bring him back. I know his character, I guess, seemingly died, but we never saw it.
Yeah. You know,
so I could see them bringing him back.
Because in the second one, it was just kind of like, really? Like, I don't think he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fun to bring back no death. That's always the rule.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we're going to get to the meat and potatoes of the episode. Most of us saw Scream. The only person that didn't see it was Owen, but Owen still wanted to be involved in the conversation.
We're going to have some spoilers, guys.
Are we allowed to spoil?
I'm fully aware. He said, I was on vacation all week, so I didn't get a chance to go to the theater, and then got back and then had to work today. I didn't get MLK Day off, so I have not had a chance to see it, but you know, I am thrilled to hear all the spoilers and see
he's
it for
really
myself.
Doing this.
Yeah, he's really doing it. I asked him yesterday if he wanted to sit out or if he wanted to still talk about it, and he said he was willing to jump in on the conversation. So yeah, for everyone listening, there will be a lot of spoilers because that's just the nature of the movie and stuff. Before we get into the movie itself, I was thinking about this because like when Scream 4 came out, there was a lot of hype around that too. And then it opened and then didn't do that well when it opened. And I was like wondering what you guys thought they did differently this time, because like this movie opened to, they said $30 million a day, probably will make 34 to 36 by the end of, but once they factor in the MLK money and $24 million budget. So it's already turning a profit. I kind of like, what do you think they did differently this time compared to, because I feel like there was as much hype with four compared to this one. And that didn't seem to work, I guess, but this really did. And there was enough time in between films with each one too, right? There was a considerable gap between screen three and screen four, and then a gap between the fourth and the fifth one. So I'm just wondering what you guys think they did differently in terms of like selling it. And whoever wants to.
I think they really leaned into social with the TikTok.
I was just
voice.
About to say TikTok was blowing
right? I used that voice in my fan film that I just released. Like, so that I think really got everyone excited where you could actually make your own stuff and talk to Ghostface. I think that worked. I think all the social ads that I've been getting were so simple but super effective. Mm-hmm. I know like social wasn't what it was. It wasn't what it is now 11 years ago. So I think it was just a lot of TV ads, but I don't really watch much regular TV anymore. I don't even know if there were that many TV ads, but I just feel like they really hit social in just the right way where it was a little interactive, you know?
Nice. Yeah, I agree with that too.
I think they had a lot of like younger cast too, that the younger generation could be excited as well as our generation, because it was bringing back our favorite people as well as new cast that a lot of younger generation, the Gen Z are really into, like, the
Jenna
whole
Ortega.
New, yeah, and
they, this,
Dylan.
That entire cast absolutely killed it.
They were all great, and they were all very active
on social as well, right?
Yeah,
like
yes.
it almost felt like that was part of like the deal. Like
I feel
you
like
need
that
to,
was
right.
Yeah, I feel like they signed contracts that said they had to like be on TikTok. Like even David Arquette was on
TikTok. Oh my God, David Arquette. Yeah, and then Drew Barrymore like promoting the hell out of this on her show. And
our
on
show,
TikTok.
Yeah, the whole week. She had like a screen week for like all the cast on. And,
I know. And now I want to watch it all because I like stayed away from all of it because I didn't want to see any more clips or like anything. So now I'm glad you reminded me. Now I'll watch the her segments.
I think Paramount Pictures and Spyglass Media Group did a good job just. The marketing campaign itself was smart. Like even like, I remember like thinking it was cool that like the last poster they came out with where they were like, you know, the killer is on this poster. Like there was like little smart things that they did. And probably was in better hands with them than it was when they were making those last two at like Dimension Films. Like they probably I think that they realized they had something pretty viable. They had a really good creative team behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think they kind of knew that from the start, maybe when they even read the script or treatment that they presented to them, like, okay, this is what you're going to do. And this is how we can make it successful. Go ahead, Mark.
I also think, and it just dawned on me, if you guys remember Scream 4, all the publicity, the poster, even magazine covers, it was only Ghostface. They really steered clear of Nev, Courtney, David, any real faces like, but you're so right, bringing up that poster of the killer is on this poster, you know, because the first poster, I think, it was just Ghostface with the knife. Then it was like close-up of Ghostface with Sydney in the reflection. And then it was the full cast.
Yeah.
So it's funny how they then leaned into the faces that were kind of famous with this franchise from the start. Mm-hmm. Drew Barrymore's, for the longest time, we didn't really see Ghostface even in the first trailer for the first movie. You know what I mean? And even I feel like in Scream 2, they didn't show Ghostface much in the trailer. So it's funny because I know everyone loves that mask, but it actually does pay off, I think, to lean into the mystery of the people, right? Mm-hmm.
That's
where
it's
like
still great.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It's the whodunit aspect of it that like really when they do it well, it works really well. And they really leaned into that.
The thing that's scary is like it's not just Ghostface who's scary. It's not just Ghostface who's scary. It's someone that you know who could be Ghostface.
There was also a change in strategy at this one. Like four they were promoting as the beginning of a new trilogy, and then it wasn't that. So I think lots of fans were kind of confused and upset. They were like going, you know, Hayden Panettiere and Emma Roberts, they're the new final girls, they're the new Gail, Sydney, and then by the end of that film it was anything but that. So I think this one they weren't doing that promise up front. They're going, this is back to the original, back to the basics, and find out, you know, A, if everyone survives, and B, if we're going to make another movie, no promises. So I think the fans are a bit more eager to come back for that versus being told something that wasn't going
to
happen.
Also smart to drop the five from the title, having a horror movie that is like on its fifth entry, I mean, there's a stigma to that, right? Then like when it's like a fifth one, but like you can kind of make people forget in the marketing. They're like, all right, this is the fifth one. I mean, they did
that. I've still been calling it Scream 5.
I think this should have, I personally am sick of saying like Halloween 2018, like that, you know, so I don't want to call this Scream 2022 versus Scream 96. No, this is Scream 5.
And
we should embrace that.
Yeah, you know? They even poked fun like in the movie about it. Right. There was like a line that in the new movie about like, oh, the fifth, they always say the fifth one is the worst one.
Yeah. I mean, like, and you know, but you know what's funny though is that every article I've written for about Scream at Joe Blow, if I mistakenly forgot, like if I put like, oh, Scream 5, I would get an email immediately from Paramount to like, we love the story, we loved your coverage, but could you please drop the 5 from like the title? I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, but it is like, rough. It's a fifth one.
It's interesting because now I feel like, do you guys agree now for the next one? There cannot be numbers anymore. Like it can't just be Scream 6. That'd be so strange. Yeah.
Why don't they add like a subtitle to it? Or like,
yeah.
I guess now it's subtitles. Like, or what I think would be cool
something
is they could go back to what Scream 2 originally was called, Scream Again. So that could be kind of fun if they added like Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends, if they just add like one word to it, because it would be kind of weird if it was like Scream : da 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 da. Like that's getting a little like resurgent. 80s, early 90s bad sequels, you know?
Yeah, for real. All right, I'm gonna start with you, Mark. What did you think of it when you saw it? Did it meet your expectations? Were you because I know you're a diehard fan. Like,
did you like who they chose as the killers, and did you expect it?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I feel so bad talking about this when Owen did not see it.
I know.
Are you sure you want to hear it? Like,
I'm sure.
Just do it. Rip the Band-Aid.
So I'm going to just rip it off, everybody. So listen, I had fun. I liked it. When it ended, with Scream 4, when it ended, I was like, what? And like, I was like, I don't think I need to rewatch that for a while. This movie, I'm very looking forward. And Scream 4 grew over time with me. Scream 4 isn't as terrible as I thought it was originally. Scream 5, as soon as it ended, and I'm watching the credits and I'm talking to friends and like, you know, breaking it down. I even said like, you know, I'm excited to watch it again because I know I missed a couple things that others saw. So it did something right. A lot of it does not work for me whatsoever. And some things do work. I absolutely think these killers are the weakest of the whole franchise. Not physically. Physically, these kills were pretty brutal, which was, I mean, that's what Halloween has done. You know, brutal slashers are now... Yeah, you know, but the killers themselves, I called them from the second they were cast. I was like, they just look so obviously like people that would be shady. And then the motive, I still don't completely fully understand. It's a little, I just feel like also these actors, like I always think of Urban Legend when Rebecca Gayheart is revealed as the killer. And I love Urban Legend, but she was acting like the gods for the stars. Like everything was so big and crazy. And I feel like these actors, when it's revealed that the killers, oh my God, it was like Matthew Lillard times 100. It was like, you know, so I just sort of like was like, but I digress. It's fine. I would say it's maybe in my mind a little bit better than 4 because 4 had some good moments, but overall 4 was just too eh. So this I think was better. I still think 1 and 2 are like my ultimate. I think the legacy characters, you know, David Arquette had some good stuff to do. I think Gale really kind of disappointed me. I didn't get to see the Gale that I've loved for years. Like, she didn't really have much to do. Sid was fine. It was fine. That's what I'm going to say.
All right. You know, it's interesting what you said about the, like, I didn't guess who it was going to be. Like, I had an idea about one of them. I feel bad.
I knew it was Amber.
I had an idea about Amber.
It was obvious.
Amber is the shadiest girl in the whole franchise. Exactly. Yeah.
She was only like, cast in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as a
right.
Yeah,
that's cult where she member, was from. So I mean, yeah.
So she looked cray cray from the start. So that was like my. I
forgot she was in Once Time in Hollywood where she like sets herself on fire twice.
And that's also the
twice.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, And well, we'll get to it, but I have something to say about Fire. But
yeah, I pegged her just because she looked like she didn't even try to like come off as like innocent. Like it was like I pegged her.
Yeah.
I thought they did a decent job with the boyfriend because like he was so good at being like loving and like he just seemed it didn't. I wanted to assume it was him, but then he would do things where I was like, no, I don't think it's him. And then I thought it'd be too obvious if it was him. But he actually had me guessing with him up until the point where he like stabbed her. And I was like, oh shit, well it is him.
Yeah.
You kind of have the feeling that it could be the boyfriend, but I think that Jack Quaid did a good job of like kind of made him very likable in the beginning, likable enough where you're like, you at least hope that wouldn't be the case, that it was gonna be him.
I knew Jack Quaid was a killer. I knew it. I called this last episode.
I'm pretty sure when we all talked about this, we're like, we think it's Jack Quaid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna hate me, but I actually thought it was Dylan Minnette and what's her name that plays Liv?
Oh, her name's Sonia.
What's her name?
Sonia. I forgot her last name. Amar or something.
I thought it was her and Amber.
I was really hoping we were gonna have two girls. Next one, it must be two women. Come on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I kind of thought Dylan Minnette as well a little bit in the beginning, just because he also looks shifty. And then I was like, and his mom, like Marley Sheldon's character, is also kind of weird too.
Yeah.
I thought it could have maybe been him.
It would have been so cool to see her be a killer and say because no one liked her lemon squares.
No one liked her lemon squares.
I had a lot of issues with this movie because of continuity issues. Which is oddly specific, but I just couldn't get them out of my head. There were a couple scenes where I was like, this is kind of strange, especially at the end. I mean, Gail gets fucking shot and she's just like fine at the end and like not even in an ambulance or anything. And Sam, the actress who plays Sam, was like in the ambulance with Tara, but she had like a band around the outside of her shirt
that was supposed
to be like for her wound.
Yeah.
There were a couple of those kind of like scenes where I was like, why aren't they doing anything like more with this? It was kind of odd.
I think that's just me thinking
from a crew perspective. Like sometimes it's hard for me to watch a movie just as a fan. And I was just thinking about it from a behind the scenes perspective, I guess.
I think that's just the style that Matt and Tyler have. I mean, if you watch Ready or Not, Samara Weaving goes through a lot of shit. I don't know if I can.
Yeah, you can. You can.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, she goes through a lot of shit and somehow still, you know, I don't know if any of you guys have seen it.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, because there were a lot of people that got like knifed the fuck up and they were like okay.
Yeah,
like, running around the house afterwards. It's like
Gail was shot in the stomach.
Yeah, I think that's just their way of being I guess funny, like humorous in a way.
I guess so, because like Tara, because Tara, it all like should have died.
That was brutal.
If they did anything right this movie, it's that they made it serious again in tone and not too comedic.
Yeah, it was the same thing
these movies have been historically realistic.
There were a couple scenes where I laughed out loud.
Yeah, some of them were a little
Amber was like running with the knife.
Oh my god! Yeah.
all charred and burnt. Yeah.
She was like half burnt. Like she looked like the guy at the end of Dark Knight. She was like, her face was gone.
You're so right. Yeah.
But she managed, pick up the knife, get out of the kitchen and down the hall. Yeah. It's like, sure, let's go.
Yeah, how did she not die? And there's alcohol spilled all over in the kitchen and the whole place didn't blow up.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you're bringing that up. Here's the thing. If we're going to go back to Stu's house, right? We've been in this house technically three times because in Scream 3, we are in the set.
Which is sad of it.
Exactly a replica, right? So, yeah, we're not really there, but we're basically there.
Sydney's. Wasn't it Sydney's house?
It's both.
Right.
And then she like opens the door and now she's in Stu's house. Yeah. And she's like, oh my God. Right. So we technically have been at this house three times. I feel like if we're really to go back to it here, why? And someone is on fire, which has never been done in these movies. Awesome. Cool. Badass. Gail shoots her flames. let's burn the house down. Like, this house has
that's what I was hoping
nothing
would happen.
But trauma and tragedy, where that last shot of the movie is basically an exact replica of the last shot of the first movie, right? Even though we didn't pan to the sunset because now we're in a soundstage. But like, how sick would it have been if actually this big, beautiful house, half of it is crumbled and is smoking and fiery and like, whoa, like that chapter of Woodsboro is now officially over.
Like, I was just so like, hoping for, I'm glad you said that, because I was, I said that at the end of the movie to my friend. I was like, really thought they were going to burn up this house and say like, goodbye.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and they haven't totally. Darren, what were your overall thoughts on the movie itself?
I really enjoyed it. Like, I had all these, you know, kind of issues with, you know, these kind of realistic elements of it, but I had so much fun. I've seen it twice now. I was at, I work for Paramount with screening, so I was at the screening and had a lot of fun. But then I took my brother over the weekend. It was a really kind of fun audience experience. It's really funny. The killers, Amber, was painfully obvious. We all wanted to think Jack Quaid, but we're kind of going, okay, the first one did the boyfriend. Scream 4, it did the girlfriends. We're going, are they really going to go for the partner again? And then they did that, which I think it was really fun, just the way they kind of played with you, going, no, they're not going to expect that, so we're going to do it anyways.
Yeah.
I think it just,
I think what kind of gave him away is that he didn't like get attacked or hurt when he went and got the beer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That beer thing was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll be right back. It's like, come on. Like, something that had to have happened to him. And he comes back. He's just fine. He's like, what the fuck?
But
I love that scene.
He appears out of nowhere.
I love that scene though with the girl twin, Mindy, I think.
Mindy. Yeah.
Mindy, yeah.
When she's like watching Stab and then like the exact same scene of the house. That was actually, I love that scene.
So her whole,
she's like, wait a second. Turn around.
Her whole breakdown of like what these movies were, or like they were making fun of what Scream actually was, like poking fun at it, like the kind of movies that they're making now where it's not quite a sequel and it's not quite a reboot. I thought that whole breakdown of like kind of what she was saying about the industry and like what these movies have become and what they kind of have to be in order not to piss off fans was like pretty dead on. And I actually liked the stuff
meta.
I actually liked the stuff about the whole like idea of toxic fandom. I just wish like the motive would have kind of gone into that more or leaned into it more instead of just like kind of just saying that was the reason. But I like the idea.
So their motive was, so, and totally correct me because I might be wrong. So Stab 8 came out, because with Scream 4, we're up to Stab 7. So now Stab 8 has come out, but for whatever reason, the Sydney character isn't in it, which I would have thought Stab 8 is about Scream 4, but I guess it wasn't. So Stab 8 apparently is so terrible. And we saw that very quick clip, but it was like on YouTube of like Ghostface sleeveless, like with fire.
Yeah.
I just kind of needed... I needed more of like a Stab 8 clip to understand why this movie was so bad for it to be part of their motive. Like, I guess I needed to see some bad acting. I just felt very disconnected from Stab 8. So therefore, when they're like, the last movie sucked, so we want to do our own murders to give them good source material for a new Stab movie, I was like, oh, okay, but I don't really know what Stab 8 is. did you guys feel that way as well?
Yeah, there was like a disconnect because like you don't really get to see like what they necessarily hated about it. And they kind of talk about how like, you know, the Sydney character wasn't in it and like they make vague references to why it wasn't good, but you really don't, I guess it's not enough to like, we didn't learn enough for that to be like, oh, that's why you're doing it. Like if you were so upset that this last movie sucked that you were basically wanting to give them material to make something better. I think you're right. I think we did need more of like a connection to Stabby to make that work.
I almost wanted to watch them hate watch it. Instead of like watching the original Stab and liking it, I almost kind of wanted to see the group being like, see, that sucks. Oh, I like that part. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like just so I can understand how they all view this latest movie. And also I didn't love that the killers this time weren't recording the deaths. I feel like from 2 to 4, there was always an element of recording. And I just thought, why are you going to kill people and hope that a movie studio will turn your lives into a movie? Right. Make the movie yourself and put it on YouTube and make your own twisted fan film, right? I just feel like that would be a little bit more
Sinister style.
Yeah.
Right. I could have been uploading it to TikTok immediately.
Yeah. See, there you go. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny when they poked fun at some of the other movies too. Like when Dylan Minnette's character was like, oh yeah, my mom was in one of those movies. And then she basically was like, no one cares about the shitty sequels. You're fine.
Yeah.
like she saved. And like basically poking fun at like Scream 4 a little bit. I thought it had I definitely dug the sense of humor. I thought that this one did a good job of balancing the humor with the horror. At least it worked better for me than it did in the last two, like with three. Like three leaned too much into the comedy and not enough in the horror. And then the Scream 4 didn't really have that right balance to me either. I thought that this one really did. In terms of the legacy characters, I was surprised by how moved I was by David Arquette a little bit.
Yeah.
Like they actually gave him a pretty good arc. You know, and like, and you kind of, and you know what, if you're a fan of those movies and you watch his trajectory from like the first one to this one, it would make sense that this is where he's at now. Like, you know, like he kind of like he has some of the, he loves this town so much, he never wants to leave, and then like he, you know, he couldn't really hack it with Gail Weathers, who was like on had all this momentum, was on the move in her career. And I also thought it was like kind of sad, like, you know, a lot of them didn't even know that he had like was forced to retire. Basically, they all kind of assumed that he was still working. Mm-hmm. And like, I was surprised that he had like the best arc of the returning people. Yeah. You can tell with like Neve Campbell that it seemed like she got added into the mix. I don't know if she got added into the mix later than the rest of them, or if it felt like she was kind of shoehorned in, but like, I mean, it was still cool to see her, and like, it's always cool to see her. And she was, and I
I think they needed David Arquette's character to die. They needed Dewey to die for Neve to come back. Like that gave her the perfect reason to come back.
Yeah, because she made the point saying that she had no plans of ever setting foot back in that town when she talked to him on the phone. So yeah, it does. Like I know we talked about, like when we did the anniversary episode, we were like, well, which legacy character would you be okay with dying? And everyone immediately said Dewey. After seeing it, I thought it was pretty sad. I was like, oh well, fuck. And like, you know, and his reason,
I'm kind of over him.
You're over him.
I had a like no and ugly crying moment
when I
first watched it. Yeah, like
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like the type of death that they gave him was
brutal.
It was just too perfect, you know. And I think that was just something that I embraced a lot about his death in the first place.
Yeah. You know what I would have
literally
done,
went
though?
Back to a
what something that could have been really interesting and new territory for this one is he goes back to shoot Ghostface in the head, which we all know is dumb, and we all know, oh, this might be something, because I really wish they didn't put that shot of Gail in the trailer like obviously reacting in a bad way to something, you know, outside of the hospital, because I feel like we all knew like Dewey's probably gonna get it. But so he goes back. How badass would it have been if he removed the mask and we actually see who the killer is, one of them at least, middle of the movie? So at least give Dewey that, and then you see the person, maybe I guess it was Amber, you know, her eyes open and she just, you know, kills him. That would be new territory, and at least Dewey got to figure out one of the killers, you know, and it would make it even sadder that it's like he's seeing this person face to face, but he can't do anything. I just thought like that could be kind of cool for him. It was surprisingly sad. He, out of the legacy characters, is kind of like the lead. He had the most to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really sad. But I also feel like Tatum is never discussed in the sequels.
No.
His sister, yeah.
I just feel like, let's give her some love. I guess her name was written somewhere in his trailer. I didn't see it. But like, I'm always like kind of bummed. Like Randy gets his shrine.
I think there's
like a little ashes or little plaque or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a little. Yeah, but I mean, I want to see her like in a picture frame. Come on. Like,
you know what? Across all the movies,
I was surprised that
they barely mentioned. Like, I remember in Scream 2 when they were going down the list of like people, and they're like, and Gail mentions Tatum, and it's kind of like a passing, like, oh yeah, my sister. But she never really gets mentioned as someone that's significant to him that he lost. Because he lost his sister in a really brutal way, too.
Right.
And it doesn't really get brought up a lot. It's kind of crazy.
You know, it's funny. I always had this crazy theory early on. I'm like, what if Dewey was the killer?
A lot of people have.
I don't know. Like,
I'm like, surprised that they killed off Dewey also, because David Arquette isn't working much these days. And I think he like really bummed to not be a part of the franchise anymore.
Probably.
Like that completely cuts him off from any other future movie, and he's like the only one who like wanted to come back.
Unless, oh, now the ghost of Dewey is going to be popping up, and that was
the Vision. Guys, that was that's something else I wanted to talk about. Is we got Skeet Ulrich.
Oh yeah, you got Skeet Ulrich. But interesting. I mean, like
Ulrich or Ulrich. I've been saying his name wrong all these years. Wow.
For a little bit there, someone did say Ulrich, but then I even looked him up like a year ago for a Riverdale interview. Mm-hmm. He said it's Ulrich. So,
it's Ulrich? Yeah. Okay.
So I was trying to figure out the timeline in which it worked that she... I mean, maybe I was just overthinking it, where Billy was her... Yeah, when that could have happened, as far as like when we meet him and Scream and like where he's at with Sydney at that point. I mean, clearly he's cheating on her somewhere.
And didn't you wish like Sydney had a little bit more of a moment with Sam, where Sam's like, I know this might be weird for you, but I'm Billy's daughter. And I feel like Sid was just like, okay.
Nonchalant.
And I'm like, wait, Sid, let's like have a moment here and be like, oh my God. And like you know, why did Sid's a little triggered, and like Sid could be like, what was your mother's name? And like, she, cause also like, it's weird from the very first scene, Ghostface brings up Tara and Sam's mom and like her drinking issue. And then I thought, ooh, we're going to meet their mom. And maybe she has a weird past. We never met her mom.
The mom never kind of comes back.
Yeah.
She never
another
is around.
Another continuity issue I had.
Right. We'll probably bring her back in the sequel.
But I feel like
daughter gets attacked and she doesn't come back.
I know, it's like mom's in London on a business trip. That
like, they help when her daughter's in the hospital
but
being
like,
attacked.
Yeah. I just really wanted Sid to be like, okay, wait, walk me through this. Who is your mom? And I just wanted her to have like a brief moment. I don't know, maybe it's cheesy, but just something where it's like, I remember her from high school. And it's funny, I thought Billy and her had a thing going on, but I just ignored it. Or something, just so that we're totally with Sid and being like, oh my God, I remember her. Instead, she's just like, okay.
You know what? The way that he wrote her in this movie, and I thought it worked in certain scenes, but not in that one. She's just so like over this at this point. Like she's gone through it so much that I don't think anything can surprise her. So I like her like kind of brief conversation on the phone with him when he was trying to go through his old spiel, and she was like, "I'm bored." She hung up the phone with him.
Yeah,
I thought that was good.
Ghostface is back. Sorry. Yeah.
But I really appreciated the whole "I'm bored" hangs up.
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
The hang up was so fun, good. But also, how did Ghostface get her number? See that's when I'm like, Brit, I'm like, wait, how did this happen? I assume maybe when like the killer killed Dewey, maybe the killer took his phone, but show me taking his phone, and like now they have Dewey's contacts. Like that's a big thing, you know, but instead
so many
of just
problems.
Like,
yeah. Also,
like, Sydney gets a call and she's like, "Oh, hello," and then like, and yeah, it's just hard because I get it. She's been through this a lot. She even says that in the movie. But can you just like act a little more scared or like a little bit more excited? Because we're excited to see you at the house now. And I just feel like she's just like, "All right, come out of this room so I can shoot you and get this over with." It's like a little wah wah.
Also, their phones knew who was calling it every single time. I'm like, since when did technology get that good? Like,
maybe Wes, maybe Sydney.
maybe. It's like, but it was
maybe.
That person every time.
Yeah,
like,
it was
well,
the
maybes. No fun.
Yeah. I did like that when she went. Hilarious. I did like when she went in the house and she was just like, you know, killer or not, like you have to come out right now. And she just starts shooting like clearing the doors. And then that's when she shoots like Jack before we know that Jack Quaid's the killer. And he's like, "Well, you just shot me." She's like, "I told you to come out." And like she's just like completely like done, like she's over it.
He tries to back it up though. He's all like, you're shooting doors with a gun, why would you expect me to come out? Like,
yeah. And then we they try
to cover it up so much
when she falls down the stairs and she's like, "When'd she get the gun?" And he's like, "Well, I could have, you hadn't shot me in the leg." Like
yeah,
it was like some of that stuff was really, I thought, pretty good. I agree with you about Gail though. I didn't think that she was badass enough. I know they gave her badass moments in the end. She shot Amber and stuff, but
totally.
There was something very lacking about her in this.
Yeah, there was, I really, even though it was, there were a few cheesy moments in the movie between Dewey and Gale and then between the sisters. But here's the thing, when Dewey and Gale met up again, I was totally emotional. I felt bad for them because we obviously know their real life history, which is funny. A friend that I saw the movie with didn't even know they were, he's younger than me at least. And he's like, oh, I didn't know they were married in real life. I'm like, oh my God, what kind of fan are you? At least you know their history, right? We know the characters. So that was heartbreaking. But then there were just some lines. There was a lot of exposition that I just felt was when Dewey's like, and that's why I left in the middle of the night. I'm like, ooh, this is feeling a little Lifetime-y. Or how Sam is telling Tara, I found mom's journal when I was 13. Yeah. And I'm just like, ooh, I kind of wish you were showing me and not telling me. Even if you want to tell Tara this a little bit, and then Tara's like, shut up, get out of here. I really wanted Sam to take Richie to their house. And it's a crime scene, but it's like, I got to show you my mom's journals. This is the only way Tara's going to believe me is if I give her the journals. And how cool would that be? Because then she could snoop around the house and maybe Ghostface is around. I don't know. But just to actually see the writing rather than just explain it. And it's just them back and forth and it's feeling a little soapy.
A little rushed.
Yeah. It's
like monologue vomit. It's just too much for one.
I had issues with Melissa Barrera. I knew her from In the Heights and she was great in that, I thought. And I thought she had scenes in this where she was good. But then she would be in scenes with Jenna Ortega, who was infinitely stronger than me to her.
Oh my gosh.
She was acting circles around her in some of their scenes. And then that's when I was kind of taken out, maybe she's not as strong. She had moments where she was fine. And then that monologue was hard for me to watch part of it. And it was because I don't think she completely nailed the delivery of it.
I feel Sam is a hard character. Actually, because she's she actually doesn't live in town. She doesn't really know a lot of these people, but she has to be the glue to bring all these people together. And a lot of explaining, but then she also doesn't really know what's going on. It's kind of a hard character. Because I agree. I loved her in the Heights. She seems great. Mm-hmm. But just compared to some other people, it seemed just a little meh at times. But, but Jenna Ortega, also, that was pretty brilliant. I do have to say, we think she's the opening death. Based on the trailer, based on the scene. And then all of a sudden, what a cool reveal. She's alive in the hospital. And she survives the movie. This is the first time ever that the opening scene is actually the final girl. Or one of them. There are so many final girls.
I was shocked that she survived.
I was shocked based on how gave it she away got knifed the fuck up, dude. There were so many people, breaking. Like I said, that got knifed up. And I was Chad, he survived. Mason Gooding survived.
Oh, yeah. Chad should have died. I'm sorry. Chad should have died. But I kind of love that there are so many, and then now Kirby is alive, which I missed that, but how in the, when they're watching the Stab 8 clip and on the side it says Kirby is a Woodsboro survivor. So now with Kirby, Gale, Sid, Mindy, Sam, Tara, we have a really nice, I almost feel Scream 6 needs to be about final girls and which one is actually the final girl. I'm hoping that's where they're going, because that could be kind of fun.
Battle royale.
One by one, kind of they're, and maybe who knows, since Sam is Billy's daughter and she's a little kooky, maybe she kills one of them. I don't know, but I just
we
feel
don't
there's
pin
something
women
really...
against women here.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, maybe okay, scratch that. But I just feel like at least it could be kind of cool to do a whole final girl group thing and see what that is, because it used to be just Sydney, and of course Gail's a final girl, but it's really Sydney. Mm-hmm. Now it's who's the final girl? We have a whole bunch, which is cool.
Yeah, I miss the Kirby reference. That's smart. In Scream 4, they never show her dead body. They show her kind of, struggling and moving. Then there's no mention of her. Every other character, you see the body. You see it lifeless. So the rumor was that she was always supposed to come back for what would have been Scream 5 after that if it had been made. Right. So I think that would be really, really smart little thing.
And fans want her back so bad. Because I remember when they cast Marley Sheldon in this again, everyone was like, well, that's not who we wanted.
Yeah.
We want Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah.
We want Kirby. But
Marley Sheldon does get at least a cool death scene. That whole mother-son back-to-back, that was maybe my favorite moment besides, which I have to say, I thought it was a bold, risky move in this movie to go back to empty Woodsboro hospital. I just feel like Scream 4 got some flack at the end because this hospital, all this shit's happening and no one is around. So to do it again was risky. They're in a staff meeting. Yeah, they're all, yeah. The few nurses and doctors.
There is a PA announcement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, right?
That explains
but,
it.
I have to say, that whole sequence with like her in the wheelchair, that was great. And so was Marley and Judy and Wes. I thought that was pretty good and sad and twisted. Although it is kind of funny. She died in broad daylight right in front of her house with like houses right around her. It's not like it's Casey Becker's house or Sydney's house, like in the hills. I mean, we are like, hey, neighbor, but you know.
Yeah.
That buildup for those characters was good too. The buildup of
yes.
every cabinet, every door that he would open, yes. you thought that that's where... That's what I was thinking
with Final Destination. That kind of made me think of like, okay, that's not it. Yeah. You know,
and everyone in the theater when I saw it, I mean, I had a pretty rowdy theater. People were like, screaming, cheering. Yeah. It was kind of a mess. During that scene, people were like, you could hear them physically jumping out of their seat, like every time a cabinet would close.
Yeah, I've seen the movie twice. I saw it in the press screening, and then I saw it with my brother on Thursday night. And that whole scene with him opening the cabinets and stuff, my brother out loud when there was like no reveal of him yet, my brother just goes like, "Oh, this is exhausting!" just do it. He's like, "Just do it."
It was pretty. It was a bit much.
And honestly, when they finally did it, though, it was shocking though. Like the knife through through his neck or her face or whatever.
The side of the neck came out slow too.
Yeah. I had the issue with it being in broad daylight with her as well, but I thought it made it more effective. That it was like, I was like, damn, like, no, you're not safe at all, like, even during the day in front of your home.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I love the shower. I love that we had like a male Janet Leigh psycho moment. I thought that was really smart, you know, and fun.
They even said that in the movie.
Yeah.
Roger Jackson has done the Ghostface voice for so long, right? But I thought he was exceptionally more brutal than normal, like with some of the delivery. And like, I actually thought like a lot of the phone calls scenes were like all really good. Cause like he was just, I mean, he was funny in all the right places, but really brutal in all the right places too. Mm-hmm. She's crying about more. Wes and like, you know, like, please don't hurt my boy. He didn't do anything wrong. And he was just like, that's not good enough. And like, was like, he was kind of unrelenting.
He kept saying Judy.
I thought they did a good job of kind of making the character itself, like just the entity of Ghostface, they did a good job of making that character kind of scary again, like at least imposing, like because like I haven't really felt that. I didn't really
feel that way
in 4 or 3.
yeah I actually thought for a second there we were going to see the first non-Ghostface murder. I thought he was gonna distract Judy so much that she's like speeding to get home and she gets into a gnarly car accident, and that could have been really interesting and new territory where Ghostface doesn't even have to touch her but still can control how she dies, you know. But that was a good tense sequence for sure, where I didn't think both were gonna die back to back, you know. That was a good middle of the movie sequence. However, here's the thing, they all loved Wes, and also kind of bold move to kill your character
named Wes.
Okay. Right? I was like, oh, all right, filmmakers, here we go. But like the thing with the party, we have to kind of remember that in the first film they have a party, but it's because none of their close friends have died. And by that point, they only know that Casey and her boyfriend have died and that Sydney was attacked. So, you know, school's out early, let's have a party. But in 4 and 5, their close friends have died, yet Cody, Stabathon, or Big Party. It's like, if you guys love Wes so much, wouldn't it have actually been interesting if this party was a true ad memorial at Stu's old house, where it's not really a rave, it's like everyone's drinking, but it's actually really mellow, like chill and kind of sad. I just thought like, it feels a little cold to me to still be doing this, the typical rowdy crazy party, when I feel like these characters are smarter than that, you know what I mean? Or maybe I'm just getting old.
I think it shows
a couple of the characters did point that out.
Mindy
was the only one
dumb
that was
we're
like...
she was very self-aware.
Before we wrap things up, I do want to ask each of you, one, who's your favorite new character? And what would you like? I mean, I know, Mark, you kind of talked about what you would like to maybe see in the next one, but in order to keep it fresh, because the franchise did get a shot in the arm with this. I mean, as far as like people seem to be really enjoying it, it's already made a lot of money, probably going to get another one. I don't know if it's realistic at this point to keep expecting to have Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox come back, but yeah, like I'd like to know like other new people who resonated with you the most, and then like what would you like to see in a follow-up if they do one? And I'll go with you first, Mark.
I love Tara and Mindy, so I'm excited for them. My favorite character that died was Wes, my new character. And yeah, I do hope, here's the thing, even if a Scream movie, like I was saying, like 4 and 5 are kind of fine to me, nothing amazing, I still have the best time watching these movies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm like depressed the next day because it's like, I waited 2 years and I saw it. Now, like, what am I going to be excited about? You know? Mm. So I do hope we still at least get Neve and Queen at least in a cameo. I think that's okay. I think they now have enough material to take it into the Tara, Sam, Mindy territory. I just don't want to see Woodsboro again. I think we've mm-hmm. done Woodsboro back to back. We need to do what Scream 2 did and follow this cast somewhere else. And even Sid says that it will follow you, and let's do that, you know. And maybe, and like I said, I think now that Gail has her morning talk show, her like her dream, have the girls on the show. I think that'd be interesting. My idea for my fan film for Scream 5 was actually set in New York. So it's funny how I was on the same wavelength with them. But yeah, let's bring it to a whole different area, because it's less about like who you know, but there's always another ghost face. It's always someone new. So let's like go into new literal locations with it. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I actually like that little moment at the end with Sam when she asked Sydney if she was going to be okay. Mm. Kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, like because that kind of like, I think they're, if they can do this in another one, there is more to her, like, you know, having visions about having visions of Billy and like how that affects her mentally. I think there's like things they can go into with her being not so sane. Yeah. That could actually work in another one.
And I just wish that was all audio and not visual. I really did not like seeing him and the makeup and the aging. It would have been really more effective if it was just a voice in her head. Kind of like Norman Bates hearing mom's voice. Yeah. It's now Sam hearing dad's voice, but we'll see.
Darren, what about you? Who is your favorite character and what do you want to see in them?
Yeah, I loved Mindy. She was just great. All the on-point references were just some of the funniest moments of the scene. Once he died, I really liked Richie. I think Jack Quaid did a great job of, you know, creating that character. He's like, you know, that would be me in a horror movie going, why are you doing that? But here I am watching it on Netflix. That's my alibi. Yeah. As for the next one, I think I agree with Mark. You need to leave Woodsboro behind. I would love to see this, you know, kind of jump maybe 5 years down the road. So skip college altogether. We've done that. Mm-hmm. And follow the characters, you know, in the real world, working and kind of dealing with this PTSD idea of, you know, they've survived Ghostface. What does that look like? Kind of what we saw of Sydney in Scream 3. And kind of play with, is there actually something happening? Is there a killer? Or is it all in their head? Is it them? And kind of go that route that Scream 3 originally wanted to do before they had to rewrite it because of Columbine. And, you know, have Ghostface like mentally play with these characters. You know, do that big kind of twist reveal at the end, do something like that, kind of break the formula. We've redone the formula now, do what Star Wars did and, you know, go a completely different direction with the next one. And then hopefully the fans don't riot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, good luck. You definitely can't keep it the same, right? Because it just won't be refreshing anymore if you keep mm-hmm. going. Like no one in their right mind would either go back to Woodsboro for any reason or want to stay there.
Right.
For any reason. So, I mean, I think it would help to kind of move the action to another location because we've already done it now 5 times. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I know with like with Scream 3, there was like the whole Hollywood angle, but Woodsboro was still a part of mm-hmm. the story. Like they maybe even recreated on like the film set. So yeah, I think a new direction mm-hmm. like that would help actually a lot.
Brittany, also in the next one, let's see Sydney's husband, which I didn't even realize at first.
His name is Mark, which was it's Patrick Dempsey's Mark character.
Yeah.
Is it?
Right.
Yeah. Mark. He's not on Grey's. Where right? Come on.
Yeah. So like bring him in. I actually think it could be really cool if the phone rings at the start of the next movie and it's Sydney and Mark at home with the kids watching a movie and like, ooh, you know, so let's see him, bring him back.
Yeah, they kind of did mention that kind of like in passing, right? Especially when she came back to when she came to Woodsboro after Dewey died, and they're like, "Oh, how Marcus kids? Oh yeah, they're safe now." Like, yeah. and then someone who's like a parent who's like, she has two kids now. Like, I know it was her best friend that he died, but like to give her like a family and her being like, "All right, I'm gonna go back and like see what I can do to help, even though I might die." it doesn't seem like an entirely responsible thing for her to do as a mother of two with a husband.
Yeah.
Unless she was completely confident that she was going to win out this time. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that that they did bring up the fact that she had a husband and two kids, and we now know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Britt, what about you? About who are your favorites and what would you like to see going?
I agree. I really liked Mindy. I liked how self-aware she was and that she was pretty much saying what we were all thinking. That was a really interesting character. I did also like Wes, unfortunately. I thought he was going to outlive at least a few more of them. But I think that this movie also missed an opportunity because it's been 25 years that now the main actors do have children that probably go to the same. And I know that we kind of had a little bit of that influence, but I think there could have been more. I wanted to see more of the passed down generation of these villains, and I would have loved to see Sydney's kids too. I don't know. I think that there was potential for that I missed out. But I do like, Mark, I like your idea of having them, one of the Ghostface being revealed midway. Mm-hmm. I think that would be so interesting.
I feel like that's,
I really thought Dewey at that scene was gonna like rip the mask off. I thought that we were gonna get that scene. Yeah. So I would love to see them kind of mess with the formula.
Yeah. And let's do three killers, right? Why not? Maybe one's revealed in the middle and then the last two at the end or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did have someone during not the press screening, but like the screening with the regular folks there was two guys that were sitting behind me that were not happy that it ended up being a girl. And they were trying to dissect like, well, like, she was like too little and like I can't see her being one of them based on like, and there was issues with like, you know, the height and all that stuff too. Like you have to kind of like take yourself out of it and be like, all right, I guess. And and then like she got pretty beat up too when she was Ghostface on several occasions, and she looked pretty fine every time she was like in scenes at the hospital or like, you know, like, but yeah, like some people were kind of like
done really good makeup.
Yeah, they were kind of upset that like it turned out to be a girl because they didn't think like she was physically imposing enough. But I thought she gave off crazy enough where I was convinced that it could be her. The fact that I within the first like few minutes of meeting her, I was like, oh, it's definitely her, because she couldn't even hide the crazy eyes or anything like that. I was like, no, it's her. And no matter what dialogue they gave her to make it seem like it couldn't be her, I was like, nah, it's still her. You don't cast someone like that and have her not be the killer.
Yeah, it's even worse than the second time. She brings up the puffer like three or four times in the opening of the film, and what gets them to the third act? It's the puffer being gone. Mentioned it four times. Like that should have been a dead giveaway. Like she's all concerned about your medical conditions. Like come on.
And Donnie, we'll have the last words from you. Who was your favorite, and what do you want to see in the next one? When we get one, because we know
I don't know if you guys can see me. My camera's acting up.
That's okay. We can still hear you.
Honestly, I gotta go with Richie. I don't know if this is just me bias because I love Jack Quaid, or because I actually thought he played a very good character. I don't know. I felt he was a little bit relatable because like a lot of people kind of like tell me about movies that I haven't seen yet, and I'm there watching them. It's like you guys said, I'm on Netflix, I'm on Hulu, I'm on Prime, on whatever streaming service I can find one. I don't know. I guess I just found like I could sort of relate to him in a type of way character.
Mm-hmm.
I did love him as the killer. I'm sorry, guys. I thought Amber and Richie were fine killers. I think I enjoyed them a little bit more than Jill and Charlie. I think this is a little bit of a step up. The motive was a little wonky, but it kind of felt like a callback to Mickey's whole like let's blame it on the movies, even though that wasn't really.
Definitely.
But I always thought that was sort of like pretty
Clever. And it was a good, bring up a good point that it goes back to Scream 2, because I'm pretty sure Billy's mom and Mickey found each other online, and it sounded like these two found each other online, mm-hmm. right? So that was a
found each other on Reddit.
Yeah.
They found each other on Reddit, yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a good callback to like the Scream 2 stuff and how they found each other.
Because this movie, like as we were saying, didn't really call back to any of the sequels. And if anything, I thought they said something that really kind of irked me, that they kept saying Billy was the mastermind. But we learned in Scream 3 that actually Roman was
like,
created all of this. So that was kind of weird that it's mm-hmm. like, wait, you know, actually, Billy, was obviously a major killer in the franchise. But it really was Sidney's half-brother that got things going. So, they sort of picked and chose what history they wanted to really talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right, I kind of thought they weren't bringing up Scream 3 for a little bit, just because like maybe it's considered not the good one. But then there was like Scream 4 references to, like, so that they could have mentioned all of them and been fine. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, like, you know, that they kind of, I don't know if they forgot while writing it, but Roman was the one that kind of controlled, at least in the third one, that was the one that was responsible for getting Billy and Stu together to do what they did in the first film. Yeah, I know they missed the opportunity not to kind of reference that, but I mean, I think they just wanted to harken back to the first one a lot and imply that, you know, it was Billy and Stu who just like his crazy cohort conspirator. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like I liked it overall. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I put it on Twitter too, that like I kind of, the way people were responding to it on Twitter was just so positive, and I kind of like the film, the first one did in 96, I would like to see kind of a resurgence of like these kind of slasher movies again, because we don't really have a lot of them anymore. And I think there is potential to kind of make movies like this again and have them be fun and have them be good. And like, I think the kind of excitement that Paramount kind of saw with like the opening weekend numbers kind of shows that, you know, people do want to see it. And I know that the Scream name has like, you know, it's a huge fan base and a lot of people love the franchise, but I think it'd be so cool to kind of see like a rebirth of like the slasher like subgenre again of horror. Like, I would love to see that. But yeah, I mean, it just reminded me of how much fun these movies are, especially in the packed theater. I mean, like, I was happy to see it at the press screening, but it was more fun seeing it on Thursday night with a rowdy bunch of people at like all the things that would normally annoy me in the theater with people talking and all that stuff. Like, I loved every single thing about it. Like every time someone was
I couldn't stand it. I was about to murder
you were like, no.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I was about to pull a ghost face.
the commentary alone.
I'd be like you, Britt. I would not like that. I was luckily in a very quiet theater to the point where like no one like laughed. I was like, I think we can all laugh a little bit, guys. Like, wait, we can loosen up a little.
There was also like a generational gap with some of the jokes. So like there were certain jokes that I got and I thought was funny, and then clearly there were people younger in the audience that like I felt stupid laughing at some of the jokes, because like they were just like, oh. And then someone at the end didn't even know what the four West tag was. They're like, who's West? And they were like, I was like, it's for Wes Craven. They didn't know. And I was like,
I'm gonna have to join that ship with you on, because I laughed at a lot of things too that nobody laughed at, and I'm like, come on. Give it a chance.
But yeah,
again, that scene of Amber fully charged, just running.
Yeah, I actually got a lot more laughs. There were some screams like, holy shit, like that just happened. But like, I don't know. I feel like there was a good like divide between the two. So it was pretty fun. My theater was pretty rowdy too, but it was all the right rowdy. Like we all were crying when Dewey met his unfortunate end. Like I was ugly crying, like beating me very hard. I'm like, this just happened.
And I'm also so happy we got Red Right Hand back, because that wasn't in 4 at all, which is so weird. But they played the song in this movie. So
and like, use it well. It was used although, very well.
That's, oh yeah.
It was used very well, although that character had not one thing to do. What was his name? Vince? That was Vince? A strange role.
And they only used him as a connection to Stu, right? That was like the only
Stu's connection. Yeah.
And they said it so like, oh yeah, that's like Stu's nephew, when actually I wish Richie was Stu's nephew. That would have been really cool. That
you needed one of the killers to be related, because they weren't.
And that's why he's you know dating Sam, because somehow he knew that she's Billy's daughter. Like that, and also because Jack Quaid kind of, you know, has that look that Matthew Lillard has.
Yeah.
That I'm like, wait, so Vince is related to Stu, but you know, it was kind of strange, but yeah, but good scene for sure. Yeah.
They could have also framed Sam for doing it. Like they could have killed everyone except for her and made it look like including themselves, and made it look like she, as like a former killer's daughter, just went on a killing spree and killed everyone.
Yeah,
that could have been interesting.
That was been interesting too. Before we go, I do want to make a comment about the, I love the commentary that they had about like elevated horror movies and how like basically like there's stuff like Hereditary and It Follows and The Babadook and like how like, because like, you know, it's funny when you,
I still love The Babadook.
I still love The Babadook. Yeah. When, because you know, when those movies are coming out, right, and you go on like Rotten Tomatoes, like stuff like It Follows and The Witch and The Babadook, the Rotten Tomatoes score is super high and all these critics are like, oh, it's like one of the best horror movies in years. And then like when regular people see it, they're just like, I don't get it. Like I had a friend that saw The Witch and was like, what the fuck is this? Or like her, like there's a lot of like, I thought that commentary on like elevated horror films, and then him getting annoyed with her at the beginning when she was like, I don't really know anything about Stab, but like ask me questions about like Hereditary or The Witch. Yeah. Like, I thought that was like kind of funny, because that is kind of like the device that there's like a divided group of horror fans where it's like people love those kind of movies that are like smarter. And then there's some of us who just kind of like to shut our brains off and just watch something like, you know, like Urban Legend or I Know You Did Last Summer, or like, you know, because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And like, I thought that was like interesting that they pointed that out a few times. And I did love the line that after she shot Amber and like just harking back to I thought that was cool. But yeah, overall, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was a, I mean, I've seen it twice. I'll probably see it again because, you know, it's Scream and I love it.
Did anyone else catch that not so subtle Rian Johnson comment?
Yeah, I got the Rian Johnson comment.
I'm like, wow.
That was early on too.
That was early on.
It was like, yeah,
the guy they said directed that he directed the guy that he directed one of the Stab movies. Yeah, I thought that was
Yeah,
I thought that was cool. Well, I want to thank you guys all for being on with us tonight and talking about the movie and some of the hot topics at the beginning. It was a great commentary from all of you. It's always fun having fans on the show, especially when they're passionate about like the topic. And yeah, we already knew Mark would be, because like he like a lot of the reviews that we got separately about that episode were like, that guy is really good, like you should have him back. So
thank you. Oh wow. Well yeah,
so like, hey, so
that's why,
and then you
that's Darren why I have Donnie, props.
You guys are also there you go.
Yeah,
and Darren and Donnie, you guys were also great too, and I'm glad that you guys were able to come on. I know it's kind of, I did it last minute, but thank you guys for coming on as well.
You caught me on a perfect day, let me tell you. Oh, good, good. I was glad to be here.
Oh, and how does it feel knowing all the ending?
I've enjoyed every minute.
Oh, just believe me, when you watch the movie, believe me, these spoilers are still gonna like hit you some sort of way.
I think it hurts. It was great. I just kind of soaked it all in, and love to hear all of your different perspectives on what you guys liked. And so I think it's definitely given me an opportunity to pick and choose some certain scenes on my, as the scene is approaching, I could say, okay, this is what Mark was thinking. Here's that continuity error that Brittany hated. And I'll be able to kind of pick and choose and point that thing out. So it was great. I the feedback was awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Wow. Nice.
Well, Owen, as usual, you gotta sign us out, homie.
Yeah, well, like Gay said, thanks so much for being on, guys. I know sometimes it's last minute, but we always enjoy having people on. I love Monday nights, just be able to talk to good friends and any movies, especially when it's a Scream anniversary and new ones coming out. So hope to have you guys back soon. And as always, we are a Playlist Original. Hopefully sometime soon we can do a Back to the Blockbuster approved of one of our other actors that we like, dislike, but a lot of good content coming through soon, and starting off the year right. So thanks for having us on. Thanks for being on, and can't wait to keep doing it.
Thank you guys. This was so fun.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Thank you. It was great.
Thank you guys.